Hey, this is Stead with the Knights and Heroes Beer Alliance wishing you a warm Canadian welcome to Guildcast. No pun intended.
Everyone, welcome back to this 93rd episode of Guildcast for February 5th, 2008. I'm your host, Sean. And for this episode, the topic is current class trends, where I'll discuss the current trends with the current skills the way they are now in both PvE and PvP. But I'll mostly be focusing on PvP, since that's pretty much the most strategic way to play a class. I guess you could consider this episode like a condensed, nitty-gritty version of all other Revisited Profession episodes, which I did mention that I was going to go back and redo, but this one mainly focuses on builds. And also, what I'll do as a companion to this audio is I'll put the build template codes for everything that I discuss here in the show notes for today. But first, the one person who has to be mentioned this week... Yeah, that's right, one person, is Yukimi no Damiro. I don't know if I said that right, but forgive me if I butchered that. And now on to the news. There wasn't too much game news this week. There was a lot concerning the fact that the bonus mission packs are now available in retail stores, or at least in the online store. And there was a lot of PvP tournament news, things like that, but I was recently contacted by the creator of PvX Wiki, you know, the new, basically the replacement for Guild Wiki, and it was regarding a contest that they're doing over there that starts this week, actually. It started 2 days ago. And I'll read from the press release that he sent me. It says, PvXWiki.com is holding a new contest. Can you play by our Guild Wars limited rules? ArenaNet is known to do amazing things to the world of Guild Wars. Here at PvX Wiki, we have taken things one step ahead, introducing our own idea for a future Guild Wars, the Guild Wars limited edition, accessible to all campaigns released thus far. Why limited, you may ask? The answer is simple. Instead of 8 skills, the Guild Wars limited edition only allows players to use 5 skills on their bar. That's right, 5 skills. It's just like the Guild Wars you're used to, but only using 5 skill slots. Try your hand at making builds for the Domain of Anguish, Urgaz's Warren, and even Team Arenas and Guild vs. Guild battles with these limitations. For the second official PvX Wiki contest, we are inviting you to come up with your very own limited edition builds with this new restriction. Anyone can enter, and winners will receive limited edition Guild Wars Razer Death Adder mice. PvX Wiki is proudly sponsored by Razer, for gamers by gamers. So, basically what this is, like it says, you know, you're building your own builds for certain areas, you know, be it Domain of Anguish or Urgaz's Warren, anything else, with the limitation of only using 5 skill slots instead of 8. And it started, actually, February 3rd, which... is actually the day I'm recording this, but by the time this is released, it will be 2 days prior, and it ends on February 24th. So go check out pvxwiki.com for more information. Also, I wanted to mention really quickly that this isn't exactly news, but the theme song from last week, I had everyone guess to see what it was, and amazingly enough, I got a lot of responses. A lot of people knew exactly what that was, but... the most astounding thing is that someone actually answered with the correct answer within an hour of me posting the show. And that song, of course, was the Gremlins Rag, which is the theme song to the show Gremlins, to the movie Gremlins. And that was done by Jerry Goldsmith. So all of you who wrote in and got that right, actually, at least you'll know that you got it right. I still have yet to give the prize out to the person who won, and that's only because I haven't actually been in Guild Wars yet. But he is actually on my friends list, and next time I see him on, when I'm on, which will be probably a miracle, he will get the prizes. So, thanks for all the people who guessed, and I really appreciate the participation. It was kind of a fun little thing, little impromptu thing I did, and maybe I'll do it again. Okay, so current class trends in Guild Wars. I must say this is a pretty difficult topic to put together, and please keep in mind that come the next skill balance, all of this might be completely useless information, but I just thought I would go ahead and just talk about these things. You know, I get that a lot. I get asked a lot, what's a great build for so-and-so class? And while this could literally change daily, depending on the skill balances and nerfs and things like that, I just figured it would be a good idea just to get some of the current ones together, because a lot of the older ones that maybe should have been nerfed were only nerfed slightly, or people have found ways around them, but there's a lot of good ones that people have discovered that still work pretty good today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over some builds, and I'm going to go over some strategies and anything else that I found in my deepest research for each class. Okay, so that's a complete lie. 99% of the info here was gathered by fellow listeners per my request over the last few weeks. Actually, it's been about, it's been at least a month now. I've been trying to set this together and get this out. So huge thanks goes out to Grugio, Slash, Lima Bean of Doom, and Chio for their contributions to this episode. Also, since there's so much info to cover, and I want to try to keep this as non-boring as possible, I won't read over the details of each skill in each build that I mention. Finding skills and their details is pretty easy with a simple search on the Guild Wars Wiki or the PVX Wiki that I mentioned a little bit earlier. Again, there will be template codes for the builds that I mentioned here if you'd like to check them out yourself. I'll list the codes in the order that I mention them and arrange them in the show notes according to each class as well. So, like, let's say I talk about the Assassin, and the first build that I mentioned for the Assassin, you'd look in the show notes, it'll say, like, Assassin, and then it'll have all of the different builds that I mentioned named in order and their template codes. So you can use that as a reference to go by while you're listening to this episode, if that's possible. So let's go ahead and just go down the line alphabetically and start with the Assassin. I think most people can agree that if you're going to make an Assassin and you enjoy both PvE and PvP, you're just better off making a PvP sin. Why? Well, of course, this isn't a hard and fast rule here, of course, but the Assassin's skill chains and the interrupts and the spiking abilities and even the shadow stepping and things like that just make it a perfect class for defeating something with some brains and not just randomly walking in a pattern all day waiting for you to come and attack it, which is pretty much what happens in PvE. Plus, one of the biggest draws for a Sin in PvP is the fact that they range from a pretty easy-to-learn class to some pretty advanced builds. So you can start out with a Sin and do fairly well, but then there's also the really advanced builds that take into consideration, the actual order of the chain combined with conditions and hexes and shadow stepping out at the right time and all this stuff, and, what happens if this happens to you. If this skill is interrupted, then you can go to plan B and go to this skill. And it's really, they get kind of complicated, and I know a lot of classes are like that, but an Assassin is particularly good at something like that. So then, why would you want to play one in PvE, after all I just said about PvP? Well, that's pretty simple, because the main reason you'd want to play one in PvE is just you want to, I honestly think that I've seen more Assassins with the Survivor title than any other profession. And I think that probably stems from the fact that they want to prove that it can be done, because the Sin gets some pretty bad press. And, I personally have had no hand in that at all. So I don't know where that comes from. But some of the builds that are pretty popular is there's a new Shadow Prison build which uses cripple-based knockdowns, and it's seen quite often, especially in RA. Now, the whole spike can be stopped if cripple is removed, but it is great for killing stuff just really fast if that's what you're into. This will be the first build in the assassin in the notes for today, and it's called an assassin warrior trampling build. And there's also one called an You're All Alone variant, which is much more reliable, but it's more conditional also. It uses a similar, if not identical, attack chain. And that will be the second build that I'll put in there for today. Another similar variant uses an enchantment base rather than a hex. That one is an Assassin Dervish variant called Grenth's Grasp Assassin. Aura of Displacement Assassins also can be effective, the most common being a variant of the Assassin Elementalist AOD Shocksin. Oftentimes there are also gimmicky Dancing Dagger spammers that run around, but they're less common after the changes to Deadly Paradox, which happened pretty recently. Shattering Assault is becoming a more used elite skill. The attack chain is unblockable and can remove defensive stances and enchantments. Impale is often used for a deep wound at the end. The whole chain recharges in 4 seconds, so it can be spammed as energy allows. And that is called the Shattering Assault build. And your secondary doesn't really matter on that one. Then there's the Critical Scythe build. This bar is used in random arenas mostly, but it can be modified for Hero's Ascent as a Shadow Step Spiker. It has good defense and huge damage plus deep wound because of the AoE nature of scythes, and this can also backline very well if two or more melee are training on one of your teammates. And then the last one for the assassin builds is a Hero Battles SP Sin. This assassin uses a Hex and Black Mantis Thrust to trigger the cripple requirement for the spike. Shadow Prison is used on one spike, Siphon Speed for the next. Siphon Speed is also used as a snare to slow down runners. Tiger Stance is used to increase attack speed to help prevent the Hero Monks from catching the spike in time. No res sigs are used in Hero Battles, so keep that in mind. Alright, so now we'll go down to next alphabetically is the Dervish. The most common Dervish builds in RA are by far the Avatar of Melandru builds. Avatar of Melandru gives a hefty health bonus as well as immunity to conditions, allowing a dervish to use Wearying Strike and draw conditions without penalty. Immunity to conditions also means invincibility against the previously mentioned cripple-based assassin chains. Many dervishes also choose to bring Wild Blow, with a warrior secondary of course, landing a critical hit with their scythes. And that build, that AOM dervish build, will be the first one in the Dervish show notes. And then there's the Avatar of Lissa, and those Dervishes are also pretty common. And what this does, the Avatar of Lissa grants a damage bonus against foes activating skills. So a Dervish assassin often uses Avatar of Lissa and high damage assassin chains to spike for large amounts of damage, in theory, to targets activating skills. And then there's a variation of the Avatar of Melandru Dervish that I'm going to list as the third build. And this is a GVG build that's a direct counter to much of the anti-melee skills used in GVG. When the Avatar form is up, the B-Surgers and Crip Shot have no effect on the damage this build puts out. Its scythe also combines well with Splinter Weapon for killing balled-up players or NPCs pretty quickly. And with the extra health that the Avatar form brings, this build is unequaled at VOD. And the last one of the Dervish builds is a Teleport Spiker. This build is used in Hero's Ascent to quickly teleport or otherwise rush in to apply deep wound for a caster spike. Because you cannot pre-prot against teleport spikes, monks will need to use their reflexes to save their party members. This build has Disrupting Dagger, which can be switched out for another teleport skill, depending on what is needed. While waiting for the Shadow Step skill to recharge, the Dervish can dash quickly to the target as well as catch the opponent's monks off guard. Alright, so next we have the Elementalist. The first one in that is the Blinding Surge Elementalist, which can shut down the opposition's melee, and that makes them pretty common. Gale is often brought as well to interrupt res sigs or to knock down the kiting targets. The next build is a Mind Blast, which provides energy management for high-energy spiking skills such as Rotgert's Invocation. Because Fire Attunement and other enchantments are often maintained, Mystic Regeneration adds to survivability. That Mind Blast Elementalist build will be the second one I list. And then there's also an Elementalist Dervish Invocation Elementalist that I'll list as the third one. Augury of Death is the last Elementalist build here, and it's often used with Starburst to teleport in and unleash a chain of devastating point-blank area of effect skills. And again, that's the Invocation Elementalist, which is an Elementalist with a Dervish secondary. Alright, moving along, let's go down to the Mesmer. A popular spike build used in random arenas is the Enchanter's Conundrum Spiker. All damage dealt from the spike is armor-ignoring, so it is effective against all classes. Augury of Death with an Assassin secondary applies deep wound, making the spike even more deadly. So that Conundrum Spiker will be the first build that I'll list under Mesmer for the show notes. And from the Illusion line, if you want to use Migraine, which is a great elite skill, it's probably one of my favorite, those Migraine builds are pretty popular in PvP, especially in RA. A Migraine build, while not possessing the energy-draining abilities of a Domination setup, it still provides additional pressure through health degen, increased casting times, and interrupts. And that's the Migraine Mesmer, which will be the second build for the Mesmer. Now, the next one we have is a Glyph of Energy Mesmer. And what it does is it uses Glyph of Energy to remove the exhaustion from Gale, allowing it to be spammed. If you use this in conjunction with Blackout, this Mesmer can chain a massive amount of shutdown on a single target, or slow down a flag runner. Next we have the Deadly Shutdown Mesmer. This Mesmer bar is used to shut down a single caster, namely monks, for an extended period of time. By timing the skills just right, it is possible to not allow even a quarter second cast off. While normal Mesmer shutdown hexes can be removed or cast, through this Mesmer shutdown it's a little bit more complete. The shutdown is also complemented by a small amount of pressure which will slowly kill a single target. Slash says that he also uses it to beat the infamous RA soloer in a 1v1 in random arenas. And this infamous RA soloer, he has a link to one of his videos on YouTube. And I'll actually put that up there too so you can check that out because it's pretty interesting. And finally, the last Mesmer build is the Hex Eater Mesmer. This build is used to help support monks against teams running hexes in GVG. It has a powerful enchantment removal, interrupts, and the all-important skill, Diversion. It also carries a hard res spell, Flesh of My Flesh, and with fast casting, it can get the skill off quickly. And now let's move on to the monk. The monk is a pretty popular class to play, especially in PvP, just for so many reasons. So let's name some of the more popular builds for the monk. Of course we have Zealous Benediction, and these builds are so popular because of their ability to provide large heals on small teams. Being protection prayers based, these are used in tandem with protective enchantments, mostly like Protective Spirit, Spirit Bond, Guardian, or Reversal of Fortune, which is a staple in most monk bars. This is something that Loudon talked about in the last Monk Revisited show that we did. Glyph of Lesser Energy is often used with an Elementalist secondary, making Zealous Benediction a 0 energy, 170 point heal. If the target is under 50% health, the monk can actually see a net gain of 7 energy, which 2 energy if you count the 5 energy from the glyph. An Assassin secondary is often used for the self-defense of Shadow Arts. Because melee attackers are common in arenas, Return can be used to kite instantly, crippling your would-be attacker as well. Nothing is more annoying than building up just enough adrenaline to unload your spike when your target teleports away and leaves you crippled. So that is called it's a Monk Assassin Shadow Arts Zealous Healer. After the buff to healing prayers recently, Word of Healing and Glimmer of Light are becoming more common. These are often used in hybrid builds that utilize protective enchantments as well. We have the Word of Healing GVG Monk. This monk is a hybrid heal prot monk. It actually carries Aegis to form an Aegis chain with the prot monk, along with prot spirit to pre-prot spikes and infuse to catch anything that prot may miss. This miss condition is used to remove conditions from the RC, and also for itself in case it needs to split from the party's other monk. It uses Glyph of Lesser Energy to help manage energy. And we also have the HARC monk. This RC monk is used in Hero's Ascent in either a 2 or 3 monk backline. It carries Spirit Bond and Guardian to pre-prot spikes. RC is used to mostly remove deep wounds and blinds. Shield of Absorption is perfect to keep the ghostly hero alive on altar matches, and Aura of Stability prevents the ghostly from being KD'd while capturing an altar and from relic runners being knocked down. This monk has channeling to help channel tank on altar matches and also against high pressure teams. To a lesser extent, Shield of Regeneration and Shield of Deflection are also used. Because the protection line lacks straight heals, with the exception of Zealous Benediction, which is an elite, Gift of Health is often used with these. There's no penalty to the caster because it is never used with any other healing prayers. Okay, so moving right along to my favorite, which is the Necromancer. We have a couple builds for the old Necro. Because of the high number of melee attackers found in RA, many necromancers choose to use anti-melee bars. Parasitic Bond is the favored cover hex. Commonly used skills are Insidious Parasite, Price of Failure, Faint-Heartedness, and Reckless Haste. This is the Necromancer Elementalist Spiteful Hexer. The second build I have for the Necromancer is the Necromancer Assassin Toxic Chill Spiker, and it's often used with Augury of Death and other hexes to cause high amounts of health degeneration and trigger Signet of Toxic Shock. And finally, the last build, there's not really much to say about it, but it is a great build for a hero, and that is the Necromancer Elementalist Tainted Warder. Now on to the Paragon. The Paragon has two major builds that are played right now in PvP, and one of them is a great GVG build. It's called the Song of Restoration Paragon, and this GVG Paragon build spams small adrenal spells for energy management and makes use of the motivation skills for party-wide healing, an option that many teams have taken with the nerf to LOD. It also supports damage to help with pressure and to add to spikes. The hard res can be exchanged for a res sig or another attack skill, depending on the team's build. And the second Paragon build is a defensive anthem build, which is used a lot in Hero's Ascent to add to a team's passive defense. It has spammable adrenal shouts for energy management and support skills for spikes. Defensive Anthem is often chained with another Paragon running slightly different skills. As one Defensive Anthem goes down, the next one is put up. Song of Concentration is also included in this build to assist with altar matches, making it harder for your opponents to prevent your ghostly from capturing the altar. And now, this brings us to Loudon Swain's favorite profession, the Ranger. The Rangers often pressure opposing teams by spreading several conditions over an entire team in short amounts of time or by interrupting heals and res sigs. The two most common Ranger builds in RA are probably the Burning Arrow Ranger and the Broadhead Arrow Ranger. Burning Arrow Rangers can stack Poison and Burning, some also bring Screaming Shot for bleeding as well, on multiple targets. Heavy Degen eats through heals and leaves monks spamming condition removal spells, which allows other team members to pick apart the opposition. So that first one, that's the Ranger Monk Burning Arrow Ranger. That'll be the first build I list. Broadhead Arrow Rangers are also popular, dazing monks and also stacking bleeding and poison to cover the daze. And Lima here says, many a time have I seen a target accidentally dodge a BHA. But Shadow Walk is often taken with an assassin secondary to shadow step in, hit your target with BHA at point-blank range, and then jump out by canceling Shadow Walk with Dash or Natural Stride. However, this leaves the Ranger with no Mending Touch as condition removal. So that Ranger Monk Broadhead Arrow Ranger will be the second build that I have in the notes for today. And the third build is pretty popular still in RA, and it's the Ranger Warrior Bunny Thumper build, which I'll have listed as the third one. Alright, so next we have the Ritualist. And for this one, I was given a huge segment submitted by Chio. He actually started writing this a few weeks ago, or probably a few months ago, for a revisit of the Rit show, which I was going to do, but this kind of melted into this show. But I'm going to actually read it here, and you have to bear with me because it's always hard to read something that someone else wrote, word for word. So here it goes. This is Chio's words. In my opinion, ritualists are a side dish, like French fries. You don't actually need it, but it's good to have around. Yes, you can eat Big Mac without French fries, but with French fries, it's just better. That's what ritualists do. It's like a side dish class or a hybrid class. Yes, we can't heal like monks, but we can also relieve pressure from them. Yes, we can't nuke like Ellies, but we can help others deal more damage by adding weapon spells or just dealing direct damage against foes. Rits can do almost anything, but not as good as their counterparts. I'll tell you an example in Guild Wars. I usually do all the missions with heroes and henchies, but whenever I do hard missions with my friends, I always bring shelter and other skills to aid. In Gate of Pain, you will see those spiders who deal massive amounts of damage. To protect the party without a ritualist, monks have to cast Protective Spirit to those few who will go in and get aggro. But what if that spider breaks aggro and casts Liquid Flame on the others? That's a one-shot, one-kill, my friends. Spider breaking aggro is a rare case, but it's not 100% guaranteed that it will only aggro one person. So this is where ritualists come in handy. Rits drop shelter, cast some signets to lengthen the duration of shelter, and then there you go, there's a party-wide protective spirit. Even if the spider breaks aggro, it would be much easier for the monks to handle. That's why ritualists are not necessary to a group, but it's good to have around. So you decided to make a ritualist. Well, you wouldn't be expecting party invites as much as all of the other core classes. You're in Xingjie Island thinking, what would be the best build ever? So you grab everything that you think looks nice. Maybe Splinter Weapon here, Displacement, maybe. Oh, Wielder's Boon, that looks nice. You go out and you see that you can't do any damage. Your healing is low and your spirits die really fast. So what are you doing wrong? Press K and what do you see? 4 attribute points? But what do they do? I'll tell you right now. Channeling is what I like to call a damage attribute. Even though other attributes have damage skills, but not as many and effective as channeling. Most channeling skills have lightning damage, but some also have armor ignoring damage. You might think channeling is like air magic. Yes, mostly it is, but one thing isn't. We use weapon spells, and I will get into that later on. Useful channeling skills include Ancestor's Rage, Splinter Weapon, Nightmare Weapon, Bloodsong, and Warmonger's Weapon. There are many other skills, but these are my favorites. Communing is the attribute that contains spirits. The name says it, the attribute where you commune with spirits. Well, not all communing skills are spirits, but there are some damage skills, hexes, and skills that boost spirits' performance, like performance-enhancing steroids, maybe. And also communing is an attribute with the most binding rituals, which I will talk about later with weapon spells. Useful skills include Pain, Shelter, which is available further on down the line. There's Anguish and Mighty Was Vorazun, and this is an item spell, which I will talk more about later, he says again. Now, the next attribute is Restoration, which is the most monk-like attribute. Most of the skills in this attribute are for healing or protecting. This attribute contains Straight Heal, Binding Rituals, and Weapon Spells. Straight Heal, it's straightforward, it heals allies. Binding Rituals in Restorations are like a buffer. Life, the spirit life, doesn't do anything until it dies, but it heals a great amount. Recovery shortens condition duration, and Recuperation gives allies a certain amount of regen. And finally, weapon spells in restoration attributes are like protection spells. Weapon of Warding is like a weak healing breeze plus guardian. Weapon of Shadow is like having a dust trap over you, which it actually blinds the foes whenever they attack allies who have Weapon of Shadow on them. and most other weapons spells in Restoration are like spells from Protection Prayers. Spawning power is the main attribute for a Ritualist. In my opinion, spawning power is one of the worst primary attributes in Guild Wars. For each point spent in spawning power, Spirit's health is increased 3% and length of weapon spell for 2% per point. You might say, all Writs do is cast Spirits and give weapon spells. We don't. In fact, half of Writs don't use Spirits. However, skills in the spawning power are great energy management skills for Ritualists. It is a necessary attribute for Spirit spammers and or Writs who cast high energy skills, but again, in my opinion, I don't like spawning power as an attribute. Now, let's get on to the three unique types of skills for Ritualists. There are the weapon spells, binding rituals, and item spells. Weapon spells are like enchantments, but not really. The main difference is that enchantments are removable, and weapon spells are not. Also, enchantments are stackable, but weapon spells are not. So, it has the advantages and disadvantages. Casting weapon spells on all allies needs attention because you might have Weapon of Warding, as I said, this is like Guardian plus Healing Breeze, while you are getting attacked. And then you might say, oh, I have low health. I might cast Vital Weapon to increase the health. Well, you will regret what you just did. One thing that is very interesting about a weapon spell is that it changes the appearance of the actual weapon that the ally equipped. If you have a person who brags about how awesome his or her weapon is, just cast a weapon spell and say, what? What's so special about it? Now we go on to binding rituals, which can be compared with nature rituals from Rangers. But there are differences between them. Of course, nature ritual is for Rangers and binding ritual is for Ritualists. We know that. Also, nature rituals affect all non-spirit creatures, depending on if it was cast by a foe or an ally. Binding rituals only affect foes or allies. For example, if you cast Quickening Zephyr, it doesn't only shorten your recharge time of skills, but for foes as well. It can come as an advantage or a disadvantage. However, Recuperation, which is a binding ritual in the Restoration attribute, only gives regeneration to allies, not foes. Also, there is Soothing, which is a communing binding ritual, and that stops the adrenaline gain of foes and not allies. Item spells are spells that replace your weapon. As Lysander described on episode 49, the first Ritualist show, if you have a plus 15 energy, negative 1 staff, and you cast Mighty Was Vorazun, your staff's stat would go away, so you would have 4 pips of regen. This can be a double-edged sword. For example, if you cast Mighty Was Vorazun, you will get plus 15 armor and plus 30 maximum energy. Well, this is good, but when you drop that item, when you had 1 energy, if you were holding the item, then you will actually have negative energy once you drop the item. So yes, as a Ritualist, you will have new types of skills, but the effectiveness of it will depend on your timing. Don't spam it like you would do with Flare, but think before you cast. There are many types of ways to play in Ritualist, but mainly there are Spirit Spammers, Damagers, Supporters, Hybrids, and Farmers. There are 2 types of Spirit Spammers, the Offensive and the Defensive. Offensive Spirits use Binding Rituals that attacks with Painful Bond. It deals massive damage over a short period of time. It can spike, also can deal damage like AoE, dealing little damage to many people, basically. Defensive Spirit Spammers are ones who use binding rituals to reduce damage, heals, or help in other ways. Now, there are disadvantages to being a Spirit Spammer, and the first one of that, of course, is spirits don't move. So if you see spirits that are chained to the ground, that's why the Spirit Spammers are very immobile. Even though there is a spell called Summon Spirit, which is a PvE Kurzik Luxon spell, that can move the spirits, there was one more factor of spirits, and that's the low armor level. Even though it is kind of illogical, really, how can you kill stuff that's already dead? But a good spirit spammer knows their disadvantages and tries to avoid a disaster. The best way to avoid a spirit massacre is to place them far away from each other. Spirits can't move, so they are vulnerable to AoE. If you place them far away, this will eliminate that problem. Nightfall introduced a new elite that would change how ritualists are played, Spirit Strength. This made Ritz go into melee and deal almost the same or greater damage than other melee classes. With Spirit Strength, your attacks deal 5 to 35 more damage while under the effects of a weapon spell. If you have any weapon spell on you, then you can deal massive amounts of damage, as I said before. In Guild Wars, if I say, what's the main support class, most of you will say Monk within 0.1234.1235 seconds. Yes, Monk is the main support class in Guild Wars, but Rit can be a supporter as well. As I said before about defensive spirits and restoration magic, it can do a job that the Monk usually does. The hybrid version of a ritualist can do many jobs at once. My AWS, which is Attuned with Sung Kai, Resto build does only one thing. It heals others to reduce the pressure of monks. However, Ritz can do two jobs at once, not like some other classes. It can deal damage while healing others. This is a type of hybrid. My favorite hybrid build for the ritualist is a channeling restoration build, which uses Offering of Spirits to gain energy. It heals with Mend Body and Soul, Spirit Light, and Spirit Transfer, and deals damage with Bloodsong, Ancestor's Rage, and Splinter. If you like to do damage while still healing others, then hybrid is the way to go. Now, ritualist farming builds had, and he says, remember, past tense here, three types. There was the VWK, the Splinter Mirage, and the Spirit Spamming. The VWK, which is Vengeful with Kanhai, steals health from every enemy that attacks you. It's like a ritualist form of Shield of Absorption, yet it heals you just as well. One of the most popular farming builds for ritualist is the 330 VWK Rit made by ResDog. This build, you need 330 health with low AL, which is armor level, of course. And then the Rit uses Protective Spirit, VWK, and Spirit Bond to keep him or herself alive at all times, while dealing damage from VWK and Retribution when VWK is down. However, before the 330 Rit, there was the Echo VWK build, which was first invented by Dihel, he says. Sorry if I spelled the name wrong. Lysander talked about this build on episode 49, so I'll just touch on how it works with one sentence. Echo VWK, cast one VWK, run in when first VWK is down, cast the echoed one, and then when the echoed one is down, recharge VWK, and that's it. It's a pretty simple build. The Splinter Barrage was the mainstream of Marganite farming, and also Dead Sword farming and Stygian Gem farming. Basically what you did was you cast Splinter and Barrage at the bunched mobs, and in the Marganite farming you could kill 72 Marganites in hard mode within 5 minutes. It was a great source for people who were looking for fast experience, fast money, and fast skill points. On Thursday, November 8th, 2007, these farming builds got nerfed. Splinter Weapon dealt damage to every adjacent foe, but on that date, its function changed to target allies' next 1 to 5 attacks deal 5 to 50 damage on up to 3 adjacent foes. Now, it's still good, but the Splinter Barrage farm was nerfed. Now, something Chio did here was he asked some Guildcast forum goers in the Guildcast forum to ask any questions about the ritualist, and he got 6 questions. And he says he thinks he answered 2 of them already. So let's go ahead for the other 4 questions. Grugio asked, how do you feel about recent and not-so-recent Rit nerfs? And Chio's response was, referring to what Sean said about how new professions are so powerful, but then they get the nerf spike, I agree with him. But new nerfs just aren't fair for ritualists, in my opinion. People complained about how some spirits were overpowered because of low energy costs, so they made Shelter cost 25 energy, which is huge for non-LE classes. Also, they made Rit Lord not as good as before, and they made Boon of Creation worse. But now people complained about Rit Spike, so they nerfed almost half of the good channeling spells. I said, okay, I still have 2 more attributes to work with. And then a few weeks later, they made spirits more vulnerable. They made them burnable, and they made negative 50 health to all spirits. I questioned, how do you kill dead stuff? But I moved on. And then they nerfed Splinter. Okay, that time I was furious. they nerfed half of the good writ spells. Yet they didn't nerf anything since the splinter nerf. Hey, Anet, why don't you nerf other profession stuff as well? Don't go with, we hate writ, let's all nerf them thing. Let's go with, if we nerfed hard on one class, let's buff them a little. Or if we nerfed hard on one class, why don't we nerf others? That was my opinion. Now my fury decreased, but I am still waiting for Anet to buff writ a little. Okay, let me interject here a second. Chio, and skill balances, they nerf and they buff everything. I mean, dare I bring up soul reaping again? Dare I? Okay, let's continue with this. So the next question that was asked of Chio was from Trixer, and he said, what's your take on the overpopular spirit pooping that's going on in the Norn tournament? And Chio's response is, I personally think that writs can do that spirit pooping. Why? Because ritualists are ritualists, and we can use our binding ritual to kill that stuff. It's our primary thing. For others, however, I think they're just abusing the popular stuff. There are builds to win Norn tournaments for every single profession. They are just too lazy to find that out, and going with the flavor of the month thing. This might lead up to more nerfs on the writ. To those who are not ritualists and using spirits, please go to Google and type whatever your class is, Norn tournament build on Google. If you can't find it within 1 hour, then use spirits. But I bet you can find those builds. Stop being lazy and use your own class. Chio. Alright, so this next question is from Brian, and he said, what skills or skill combination playstyles would you recommend to help someone learn how to play the class? And Chio's response is, I listed the types of playing ritualists, which he did, and I read, and it all depends on what you want to do. There is no, it's Haxor build that it's so elite and we can pwn everything build. This is how I would decide if you would play as a beginner. If you like helping people, go with Restoration. You can heal and prop people. I recommend this playing style to those people who play monks. If you like to stay back and do nothing but still do some part for the party, I recommend spirit spamming. It really doesn't matter if you want to be offensive or defensive. Only thing you do is summon spirits and just look after them. I recommend this type of playing to people who like to talk while playing Guild Wars like me. If you want to do actual damage by you, I recommend channeling or spirit strength ritualist. I promise you, you will see lots of yellow numbers. This playing type is recommended to all classes that deal massive damage. Okay, I'm going to interject here again. I don't approve of Chio's suggestion to talk while playing Guild Wars, especially if you're in a party with me. Yeah, thanks. Alright, so Chio's last question, he says he saved the best for last. And Crazy Catherine asked, why are ritualists able to be blinded if they don't need to see? That's a great question. So Chio's answer is, I can answer you with this simple line, go ask Anet. I hope you enjoyed my guide, now go summon spirits. Now again, that little guide was written by Chio, except for the parts where I interjected. And if you'd like to contact him, you can do so in the Guildcast forums under the name Chioski. Chioske. And Slash gave me two more ritualist builds with the template codes, because even after reading all that, I wanted to throw some builds in there as well. There's the ritualist runner build. This GVG flag runner spams Pious Haste for a run buff and makes use of restoration spells to help keep itself and base NPCs alive. Weapon of Warding does not get removed by Pious, so it is crucial when trying to push for a cap. Splinter Weapon adds a ton of pressure at VOD, and Ancestor's Rage adds extra damage to his spike. While not as good as a monk for base defending or flag running, there is no denying the ritualist dervish is more effective at VOD. And then finally, we have the hero battle ritualist. This uses Blind Was Ming-san to help prevent sin spikes against your team and support heals to help against the pressure. It runs Corrupt Enchantment to remove the opponent's shield of regeneration and brutal weapon to increase the assassin's spike damage. Rigor Mortis will allow the assassin's spike to go through blocks, so long as it gets covered right away by another hex to prevent removal. Alright, if you're still with me through all that, we finally come to the last but definitely least, or no, I mean, definitely not least class, and that's the Warrior. The Warrior was the first class that I brought through Guild Wars, and the first one that I beat any of the campaigns with, and it's currently my oldest character still. But the evolution of the Warrior is quite extensive, which it ranges from the old Aiwei builds to the Shock Warrior builds to the Stance Tank, there's the Drox Runners. I mean, I guess the Warrior could be considered the old faithful of all professions, because it's not too hard to really play a Warrior effectively. If you, you know, you want to just go in and beat stuff up, you can do that. But a great thing about a Warrior is they have this reputation where everyone just expects to have one in their party at some point. It, you know, it's always like, even despite the fact that we have a Dervish now, which is basically like, I'd like to say, an advanced form of the Warrior, the Warriors are still needed in parties, especially in a tank situation. Now, axes are common with a Warrior because they provide deep wound most readily and least conditionally. However, axe builds often require an elite skill from the axe mastery line. Swords provide consistent damage and often can work without an elite skill from the swordsmanship line. Hammers provide long knockdown durations. For instance, with backbreaker builds, your target is at your mercy for 4 seconds. The Dev Hammer Warrior, which would be the first build that I'll have in the Warrior section, is you use Dev Hammer and Heavy Blow to quarter knock the target, which prevents even a quarter second spell from being cast during the spike. And then you have Rush to cancel Flail and Death Pact to hard res. The Warrior also uses a high energy set when Death Pacting, which is the plus 15 energy negative regen wand and offhand, which will actually allow the monks to come up in better shape. The most common axe builds use Eviscerate and Executioner Strike. Bull Strike is commonly used for taking down kiting targets. Frenzy is actually the favored skill for increasing attack speeds, and Rush is the favored cancel stance for Frenzy. Shock is used as an interrupt and knockdown with an elemental secondary, like the Shock Warriors, and what it does is it keeps a target on the floor while you pick them apart. A Warrior Dervish can bring Rending Touch to remove enchantments such as Shield of Regeneration, Shield of Deflection, and Guardian. These enchantments are, quite frankly, a pain in the badunkadunk to deal with, and having a means of removing them is beneficial. So, right there, I just mentioned three more builds. So, I will have listed the Warrior Elemental Shock Axe build. I'll also list the Warrior Dervish Harrier's Axe build, and the Warrior Dervish Rending Touch Axe build. And then from the sword line, Dragon Slash provides substantial pressure as well, but it's not as common. A constant adrenaline gain allows the user to spam adrenal skills one after another. And then from the hammer line, Backbreaker is by far the most effective. As I just mentioned a second ago, the 4 second knockdown, which is followed by a deep wound and hammer bash, provides a high damage output. That build is the Warrior Assassin Death Charge Hammer Spiker, which will be the last build of the day. Woohoo! So that'll do it for this episode of Guildcast. I hope you all enjoyed these build and strategy guides that were put together by the Guildcast listeners. Again, there was Grugio, there was Lima Bean of Doom, there was Slash, who put together most of the builds and gave me most of the template codes, and then, of course, Chio with the Ritualist section. So if you'd like to contact me, as always, it's Sean@Guildcast.com. That's Sawn@Guildcast.com. And you can contact any of us, any of the people who contribute to the show, including the contributors of today's show, over at the Guildcast forums at Guildcast.com/forum. So until next time, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about Guildcast.com.